This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Right now.
Welcome.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk.
What is going on up here?
I never know, man.
Unbiased.
Shut your mouth.
Uncompromised sports talk without the sugarcoating.
I hope you're happy. You wasted everyone's life for 30 seconds.
Isaac Rupp and Jason Sakanik.
Now shut up and let me do my job.
The best in sports coverage.
This is going to be great.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
All right. Welcome back. Nice little Tuesday. Wait.
Except it's not Tuesday.
It's Wednesday.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Well, we were off Monday.
Oh, that's right.
It's kind of a skewed week for you.
And I'm not bringing it like I usually do on Wednesdays, so I got to step up my game for the last hour here.
You thought it was a Tuesday show.
And yeah, and I was mailing it in.
I know. Well, that's a two-hour show. And
we're known for
towards Turdville.
Yeah.
I have hot conspiracy theory talk.
We're known for our Wednesday shows. What's going on?
Well, the American, the best defenseman for the American hockey team, for the Boston Bruins, I do believe we have medical malfeasance going on. Well, he hurt his shoulder in the Canadian game against Team Canadian. And then it turns out he's got a nasty infection. He's in a hospital and has been with IV antibiotics, and they had to go in and clean out the infection. They're not going to say it, but he got hurt in that game, and they stuck a needle in his shoulder, and that thing got infected. And they may have screwed that guy up for a long, long, long time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because how would you get an infection in your shoulder from just contact?
He clearly separated his shoulder, right? He has an AC joint shoulder, but they said he had surgery to clean out the infection. And he came back in the game, which means he went back there and they took a nasty ass needle, shoved that in his shoulder, sent him back out there, and that dude got MRSA or a nice staph infection in his shoulder. And by the way, that can kill you. It can end your career if they have to carve away a bunch of that infection, and he's probably not going to play for the rest of the year. Dude, that is like, no one's going to talk about that, but they're just, I hear all these reports, they're brushing that off. Some medical professional effed that guy over. And that
so
is,
who does he get to sue?
I don't know. But remember when Tyrod Taylor punctured his lung? This is that sort of thing, but worse.
Team USA Hockey. Wait, so the Team USA,
like the Team USA doctor put a dirty needle in him.
But wait a minute. These are NHL. This is like NHL All-Star. You're telling me that these teams are run by the...
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. I mean, I don't know who...
It is. This is run by USA Hockey.
Is it? Okay.
But I guarantee the team doctor, whoever, is a doctor of one of the NHL teams. And he does USA Hockey as well. But someone, I would bet a significant amount of money that someone stuck a needle and then didn't clean it properly, or they put him out there with an open wound. And you think about how nasty shoulder pads are and the sweat and all that. It's a real, I mean, it's something that people don't talk about, but you catch one of these infections. Like I said, he's been in the hospital for multiple days and had to have surgery where they have to go in and physically clean out the infection. And yet everyone's just like, and all the reports and like, all there's like, well, you know, he had a shoulder injury, and he's on antibiotics, but he's doing great. Status for the rest of the year, unknown. He's That's the best defenseman on the U.S. team, is the best defenseman for the Boston Bruin. If this was, imagine if this was like an NBA player, an NFL player, this would be such a bigger story.
So do we have an edge on Team Canada over this?
It is our best defenseman, and their best defenseman, who is probably the best defenseman in the game of hockey, didn't play in the first game. So this is a big deal.
I might bet on Canada.
Charlie McAvoy is our best defenseman, and then everyone thought that
malicious fecal distribution,
that we were going to get a reinforcement in Quinn Hughes, who's an American, and he sat out the tournament, and they thought he was coming back, and he said no, he's not going to risk it. So it's a big deal. So there's my little that's my hockey conspiracy theory, is someone, maybe a Canadian dirty needle, took out our best defenseman. I think the Team Canada gave him a dirty needle.
Wouldn't that be a
subterfuge?
Boy, I kind of respect it.
For an exhibition, nonetheless.
For an exhibition.
Yeah. Well, but it's personal now.
Of course it is.
With the tariffs and everything.
Yeah.
It's like, hey,
tariff
payback's
this,
a bit.
Tariff this dirty needle, yeah. McAvoy.
That's right.
I saw somebody say 25% or 25% tariffs on knuckle sandwiches. Enjoy that, Canada.
Knuckle sandwich. God, I haven't heard that term for years.
Yeah.
Hey, you want a knuckle sandwich?
I also love, too, that like a bunch of the, the get-ups and the speak now, all the stupid hot take shows. They have all these people on there that have never once watched hockey, and they're all baffled by the idea of fighting. There was a lady on, and I don't know who she was, but there was a lady on there who just couldn't process that there's fighting. I'm all for women in sports, and they can, the idea that you have to have played the sport or have a penis in order to intelligently discuss sports is ridiculous. But it was just listening to her. It sounded like someone's old mother that was like, why does it have to be so rough? We're just allowed to punch each other in the face. You're like, yeah, it's hockey.
Too violent for her?
Little bit. She was very flummoxed by it.
All right. Well, we've got the NFL salary cap number.
Yeah. It goes up every year.
Well, it went up big time last year.
Yeah.
And it's going up again.
Yep.
To 281 million dollars.
Yep, somewhere in there.
So it's up 24 million.
Yeah,
it's per a big team, deal, which allows teams to spend more money.
But I would also like to point out to the dumbasses named the Cincinnati Bengals or anyone else that can't figure out their cap: the early you sign players, the T. Higgins of the world, the early you sign them, the better that contract looks, because each year the cap goes up, so they get. It's a lesser percentage. The longer you wait to sign people, the worse it gets for you. So this is why smart teams are always able to navigate the cap, and the dumb ones or the poor ones can't. So I mean, but this is a big jump.
The Raiders I saw will have $100 million in cap space.
Yeah,
you see that?
See if they spend it.
Well, why wouldn't they?
Well, again, the idea that they don't have a lot. Anytime you guarantee, the Raiders have been notoriously cheap and bad at cap flexibility because they don't want to pay bonuses. They don't want to pay upfront money because when you guarantee money, that money has to go into escrow. So think about that. Like when the Cleveland Browns gave Deshaun Watson, what was it, $230 million guaranteed dollars? They have to write a check at that moment for $230 million that goes into an escrow account to guarantee that contract. And so teams like the Cincinnati Bengals and traditionally the Raiders have not wanted to pay a bunch of upfront money like that, nor do they want to restructure deals and kind of kick it down the road. They've just been very poor at it. So hopefully new regime there in Vegas, they can be a little bit smarter about how they go about their business. But they have a bunch of money. The Patriots have a bunch of money. The Commanders have a bunch of money. It could be an interesting offseason.
Well, I think the Raiders are one of the more interesting offseason teams.
Yeah.
If you think about it. Them and probably the Patriots, see what they do.
Yeah.
But the Raiders and maybe the Rams, you know, with what's going on with the Rams.
They got to figure out what they're doing with Matthew Stafford.
Well, yeah, his wife came out and said she was kind of pissed that they were going to trade Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
And of course, you know.
Oh my God.
His wife sucks. Can I say that?
His wife, yes. Can it.
She's obnoxious.
You've got an aging, expensive receiver, and you've got it. Like, just stop that. That's Aaron Rodgers territory, trying to bring in Lazard.
Yeah. So I don't know. Who's the Raiders' next quarterback then?
That's like, the big question.
What are they
going to
do? What about Stafford?
Yeah. The problem is with Stafford, I just don't think that Matthew Stafford to a like the Giants, you can't bring in a 30, I think he's 37. Why are you bringing in a 37-year-old quarterback with an injury history to play behind a crappy line that's nowhere near ready to compete.
Yeah, maybe they do a stopgap guy.
He's got to be a stopgap guy. The Raiders need the Raiders need to go down a road like that. You need to play around with something like that.
Well, I just think it's interesting to see what it's T. Brady and P. Carroll.
Yeah,
and I'm curious, and they're smart. Obviously, smart guys.
Smart guys.
Like they're not gonna overdo it at quarterback. It'll be interesting to see the route they go. Maybe Russ Wilson.
I saw that suggested. Suke and I kicked that around a little bit last week when you were gone.
Maybe Russ Wilson.
But there's about six spots that really need to figure out what they're doing. So the Raiders need to figure out what they're doing. The Vikings need to figure out what they're doing.
About quarterback?
Quarterback.
Yeah.
The Steelers need to figure out what they're doing. Titans need to figure out what they're doing. Giants need to figure out what they're doing. And the Jets are another one. And then that's
the Saints.
Although
they're saying Derek Carr might get cut.
Again, they're in such bad cap space. Are you really going to eat more money with Derek Carr? Are you just going to continue? They're like 50 something million. Although, and now with the cap going up, that's going to get cut in half. But that's another one that they just can't seem to figure out what the hell they're doing down there. But until you get the quarterback situation figured out, it's dicey. And the Raiders aren't going to be picking high enough. This is a really weak quarterback class.
Who's the number one pick quarterback?
Well, Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. And most people are of the belief that, like, if these two guys were in last year's class, they may not be first round picks. I mean, these are borderline first round guys, maybe second round guys, and they're going to have to be the first two guys because there just isn't anyone else. And it's a sticky spot too, because, like, if you're the Giants, this is your last chance. Your GM and coach are getting fired if you don't have a good year. So if you're the Giants, you're kind of handcuffed in that you can't roll out what you've been doing. That's an unmitigated disaster. You don't even have possibly the ability to draft one of the two quarterbacks unless you move up. You may think that one of them falls to you. But are you really rolling the dice that Shedeur Sanders or Cam Warren is going to come in and have this massive rookie season that's going to save your job, or do you may have to do something a little risky? Remember, not all situations are created equal in that, like with the Titans can probably just sit there and say, no, we're going to roll it out with Will Levis again. No one's in danger of their getting fired. Whereas the Giants, it's do or die. I mean, people are surprised they didn't get fired this year. So it's a dodgy situation. Sometimes you don't do what's best for your long-term future because you won't be around for your long-term future. Your ass is going to get canned. And the Giants are certainly in that mix. Whereas the Raiders, again, the Raiders have a probably at least a 4 to 5 year runway here. Like, no one's getting fired there. So if they wanted to do a stopgap and go with a Russell Wilson or go with a Sam Darnold or, a Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith type of guy where you try to just kick it down the road a little bit, you're fine. Some teams can't do that.
Well, Petey's getting up there, though.
Yeah, but he's a bridge guy anyways. His whole thing is to get an adult in the room, stabilize this thing for 3 years, probably find your quarterback, and then turn it over to whoever is going to be the next guy.
The offense was ripping.
Did you see the latest Ebola scare?
No.
You guys
Ebola's
on?
Ebola's back?
Ebola.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Ebola.
I don't want to mess with that.
Well,
that thing terrifies me.
I've got that story for you next.
We're bleeding out of orifices.
Followed by In the News on The Fan. Well, we had an Ebola scare.
That's fun.
It's not fun.
No. If you don't remember Ebola, you catch it and then you bleed and leak fluid and blood out of every hole in your body and then you die.
Highly contagious.
Yes.
No
but
cure.
But it's not airborne, so it's hard to spread.
Yeah, but if we had an Ebola breakout in the U.S., I mean, come on. Can you imagine the panic?
No. Well, I'm terrified of anything that we have because whatever you think of what COVID was, obviously the response to it, like, you're just, when the next one comes and it's really bad, we are going to screw that thing up because our head is going to be so far up our arse.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be politicized immediately.
Yes.
And
there will have to literally be dead bodies rolling down streets and floating in rivers for people to take it seriously.
Well, Ebola's scary enough to do it, right?
Yeah, but again, it doesn't spread very easily. So that's the saving grace.
New York City health officials ruled out a health scare after two patients were rushed to a Manhattan facility suspected of having Ebola.
Hey.
Wow.
Yes. This was Sunday, about 11:15. I don't know what you were doing. I guess it'd be 8:15 out here.
Yeah. Not coming in contact with Ebola, as far as I know.
Yeah, we're a little far away from this little outbreak here.
Yeah.
Reports started circulating that one of the patients was potentially exposed to Ebola.
Ugh.
It comes after health officials warn of a quaddemic ravaging the country this winter, in addition to the continual spread of bird flu, which has impacted poultry and cattle farms and your costs of your eggs. And thanks a lot, Joe Biden.
Yeah, but we have the Gulf of America now, so it's fine. What are you talking about?
So the two suspected Ebola patients were transported to a hospital by first responders in hazmat suits. Mm. Apparently, the news got wind of it. There was a big deal in New York on the news that they didn't know really what was going on, but there's all these people in hazmat suits.
It's not good.
Transferring patient zero over to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they concluded, so they thought that these people were, exposed to somebody who had just traveled overseas and brought back Ebola.
Yeah.
But they weren't. So health department officials there concluded that after testing, neither of the patients had or was even exposed to the Ebola virus.
Well, thank God.
So the scare.
Let's not start that here.
The scare has ended.
Yeah.
Before it even started. Didn't even know about that.
I did not.
It was a New York thing.
I just know you don't want it. Anytime the hazmat suit comes out, you don't want that. But you do have to come in contact with the fluid to get to get the Ebola. Yeah, touch the people.
So,
have you ever seen the what people look like when they get it?
No, and I don't care to. Mm. I don't really care about that.
Yeah. So, well, that's good. So we dodged that bullet. The asteroid's going to hit us in a couple years, but you know.
Hey, I saw a thing today about that.
We're up at 3.5%.
3.1.
Like
I saw
3.1.
Yeah.
It's very scary.
Well, it's not great, but at the same time, it's not a global killer, so we got that going for us.
Panic.
From in what, 3 to 4 years? When was it? Maybe it'd have been longer than that. Was it
2032, I think.
2032? So we got some time. We got some time.
Well, we also have defenses. Did you know this? There are things we can do.
Space Force?
Well, this one isn't that big.
That's what she said.
Well, when the one that comes and it's the size of a state, that's a global killer and your ass is cooked. This thing, what'd they say? It was was it 100? It's 100
Space Force.
Football field, something like that.
Dusty, I heard Dusty say today at the end of Danny and Dusty that it is at, the impact would be 500 times the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima.
Yeah.
Well, that's not good.
No. Yeah, well, so if it kind of lands in the middle of nowhere, there's not going to be mass casualty. But if it hits a densely populated area, it's real, real bad.
It's not good.
I'm sure we'll be fine.
3%.
Well, it's
we shoot some nukes at it. What are we doing?
I mean, our only defense.
Bruce Willis?
Actually, we do have a bunch of defenses, but with the meteor, I thought really our only defense was hope.
Yeah, pray to God.
Well, I don't pray.
What about Tom Cruise?
To me, it would be just hope.
We can chant.
I don't know. Thoughts without the prayers?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just hope. I think hope's positively.
Hope's a hell of a thing, right?
Hopefully a meteor doesn't kill me.
Okay. I like where you're going with that.
Well, in the U.S., we have a lot of different things we can do. One, they said we can smash a spacecraft into it. That has been done before.
Really?
Yes.
That seems like that wouldn't be very effective with something hurtling towards us, but...
Well, they say it can be, but you have to be careful with it because if you don't... it can just shoot other particles, break it up, and then there are other pieces coming
out. You turn one big death object into 40 death objects coming your way?
But they said in 2022, NASA did this. They deliberately smashed a spacecraft into a 160-meter-wide Dimorphos asteroid, successfully altering its orbit around a larger space rock.
Oh. And it worked?
I don't know why they had to do that, but...
Maybe. I'm guessing you want to test that out. I'm willing to wager that the last thing you want to do is when the death meteor is coming towards us, be like, hey, we got something that we think it may work. We've never done it before, but let's see what the hell happens here. I think you want to test that out a little bit. It's insane. Anywho.
We can tractor ion beam paint it.
What? Is that a sentence? We can tractor ion beam paint? Those are words.
Are we bleaching viruses again? What are we doing?
I get your confusion.
It didn't make any sense to me.
Well, it doesn't make sense to me. I'm just reading it. So it says a separate idea called a gravity tractor involves a large spacecraft flying up near the asteroid, and without touching it, using its gravitational pull to tug it away from the Earth. Now, this seems like a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I like where we're going with that. Yeah.
Another non-contact plan would be put a spacecraft near the asteroid armed with thrusters that would exert a constant stream of ions to shove the asteroid off course. And that makes total sense to smart people.
Yeah.
But not
dumb
ones.
It's a real Wile E. Coyote sort of situation there. I like where we're going with that.
Scientists have also considered spray painting one side of the asteroid white, increasing its reflectiveness so it slowly changes trajectory.
Get
how about
right
that?
The hell out of town.
You want to go up there and spray paint an asteroid?
Look, we've talked about the whites are on a generational run. What if the whites once again save us by painting something white? Oh, my goodness.
These subtler strategies,
that
they say.
That can't be a thing.
Really? How do you even go about that?
This is Yahoo News.
That's amazing.
You get a couple scaffolds.
I don't think that's how it works.
If you just paint something white, it veers off course.
What kind of space vehicle goes up there and paints stuff?
Oh, my God.
We could also blow it up. They say the nuclear option is we just blow it up.
I'm not going to lie. That seems...
We could take a nuke up there and...
Get Steve Buscemi, the rock hound.
I'm not here to judge or anyone's choices. But can we all admit, for better or worse... that our current administration, the only plan we have is to nuke that thing. I guarantee that if that thing was coming towards us and you laid out all of those plans, the one that would be chosen would be to fire a F ton of nukes at that thing. Guaranteed. And I'm not going to lie. I'd kind of like to see it.
I feel like that is like the first suggestion in that doesn't that still... possibly hurdle things towards the Earth?
Probably, but...
Like a lot of more things?
I was elected to lead, not to read. Oh, maybe if I guess is the idea is that if Bruce Willis has taught me anything, it's that if you break it up into enough small pieces, then they burn up entering the atmosphere.
They're also saying that a less dangerous but along similar lines is the nuclear option. You can shoot laser beams from a spacecraft to vaporize the side of the asteroid, which pushes it away.
Sharks with freaking laser beam. This all sounds so absurd, and yet, like, one of these days, we've talked about this, but... Dude, throughout the course of the planet, we get hit by S all the time. And some of it just, like, takes us back to the Stone Age. So, eventually, someone on this planet is going to have to deal with the fact that there is a big death meteor coming towards us. And this one is small potatoes compared to, like, some of the other ones that have hit us over the millennia.
Yeah, this says 7.5 years, long time to prepare. But there's roughly 97% chance the asteroid will just miss us.
Yeah. I don't like that. The 3%, like if we were talking about this while you were gone, but if I told you you were getting on an airplane or getting in a car and you had a 3 in 100 chance of dying, you wouldn't get on that airplane. You'd be like, I'm going to.
Yeah, no, it is weird. Like, because I saw something today about all the airline issues that we've had. We all have a little trepidation about flying right now.
Yeah.
Because of all the crap that's gone on.
Yeah.
I guess there was another plane collision today in small planes in Arizona.
Was there?
I saw that too.
It's like just another one.
Somebody died again.
Yeah. But it's true. Like, if you put up the 3.1% chance of a meteor hitting Earth, which is the highest percentage chance ever.
Yeah.
But then I tell you that I saw this on the news today. They said, if you have trepidation about flying, this may help you. A person would have to travel by air every day for 103,000 years to experience a fatal accident.
Yeah.
Those are your odds.
Yeah, you're fine.
So obviously, there's a clear choice there.
Exactly. Yeah, we're going to be okay. But the meteor thing, 3%, that's no good. I told you, I read a book once on Buzz Aldrin in the Apollo missions. And they did say, I want to say that statistically speaking, they said the space shuttle, and now we don't have one. But when we had the space shuttle program, I think they said statistically speaking, that thing was supposed to suffer a catastrophic failure every like 26 launches. And I'm like, you have got to be effing me. Those dudes strapped their asses into something that they said statistically speaking, one out of every 20-something times, something should go wrong. And I'm like, which is more terrifying, the first time you go up on that thing or like the eighth time you go up on that thing?
Yeah, it feels like your odds get worse every single time you do a launch.
That's a good question. I think the first time would be pretty scary.
Yeah.
But then by the eighth time, you might be lulled to sleep like, hey, we've been set for seven, right?
Until in the back of your head, you're like, wait,
a bad one of these, aren't I?
Well, but I think I look at it the other way. I think if I'm up there, I'm going, well, wait a minute, the first seven were fine, so I feel like we're on a good
path. This is easy. We got it figured out now.
Yeah. Dude,
All I know is those dudes, those Apollo astronauts, those guys have the biggest balls of any human beings to ever live in our little society. That's balls of steel.
All right, in the news is next, we have an avalanche, and McMenamins is closing one of its oldest locations. That's next. Here's Buck. Are your balls jiggling?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, someone texted and they said, way to step up the Wednesday show, Rob. I thought that was ITN.
Wrong.
Wrong.
By the way, I wanted to look it up to get my numbers correct because it's been years since I read that book.
Wrong.
So those first Apollo missions, right? The NASA reported 1 in 9 chance of catastrophic disaster during those initial Apollo missions.
Great.
1 in 9.
11%?
1 in 9.
Jeez.
And then my favorite part was after those original 9 missions, obviously they learned things. They did fry some of the astronauts in a horrible disaster. But they said that safety improvements have reduced the risk to 1 in 90. Does that feel great? You're strapping yourself into the most powerful thing that we can launch. And we're like, hey, guys, we've made a lot of improvements. Now, 1 in 90 chance that you're going to die in a fiery ball of flames.
So less likely than getting hit by the asteroid. But,
you know what, though? those people wouldn't want it any other way.
No.
No.
It's a different
breed. They're a special breed.
That's that whole Chuck Yeager, the right stuff. They just, as I said, they're just wired different. And they don't think about it. And I cannot imagine something that would be, on this planet, that would be more nerve-wracking. I mean, you've seen the size of that in the booster rockets. And you're sitting there, basically upside down. Think about how scary it is when you're getting ready to ride a roller coaster and now you're
Space
realizing
Force.
You're sitting on how many tons of jet fuel and that blast is about to go off and you're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And they're telling you now, hey, we think it's more like 1 in 90 that this thing, you know, turns out okay. But we're, you know, no, just estimates.
It's February 19, 2025. It's time for In the News. I am your noted and humble newsman. Please be seated. Thank you. It is brought to you by the Advocates Injury Attorneys at advocateslaw.com. Today is International Tug of War Day.
Ooh, when's the last time you played Tug of War?
I was thinking about that today when I put this in my notes.
Well, maybe like a Bocephus? Play with your dog?
Yeah. Well, I play with Molls.
Oh, she's a tugger?
Molly 10Gs, yeah. She likes to... She gives her little...
Yeah, mine won't play.
Little growl.
He refuses.
It is also National Boston Terrier Day.
Ah, we had two Boston Terriers.
Did you?
Yeah,
dog.
My Alaska version of my family. We had Poogie and Tasha. Growing up, were our two Boston Terriers, and they are an interesting breed.
Where does Poogie come from?
Where did we get Poogie from? I think we used to call Pooge like when you were little, like a little fat baby or whatever, like your Pooge.
Like Pudgy, but with a long U?
Yeah, and so it was a little fat little Boston Terrier. They are, I'm not going to say they're good dogs. How about they're lovable dogs, but they're not good dogs. They're a ball of anxiety.
Yeah.
A little high strung.
Are French Bulldogs better?
Not really.
Because I was playing with two French Bulldogs.
Yeah.
When I was back in Kansas, some guy had two French Bulldogs, and they were just freaking adorable.
They are, but
snorty little things.
They're monsters. They're just, they're not well behaved.
They seemed it.
They're not well trained, but they're just cute as the Dickens.
They're cute as hell.
You know, that is now the number one dog in the United States.
The French Bulldog?
The French Bulldog.
Are they expensive?
They are very expensive. Like, I think they're now like 4 to 5 Gs because they can't give birth naturally. But it has overtaken either the Golden Retriever, I think. It is now the number one breed. I mean, Mutt is obviously the number one dog, but purebred dog, the French Bulldog, is now number one, and they are little just tyrants. But people are willing to put up with it because they're so damn cute.
Well, here's the here are the deets on that aviation catastrophe. Another one. Today, this was in Marana, Arizona. At least two people were killed during an aircraft collision near a southern Arizona airport. Federal air safety investigators said two people were on board each plane as they collided. There's video of it.
Or on the ground.
They're in the air.
Because we had one in Arizona. That was the Motley Crue jet got slammed into by some dude on the runway.
Yeah, that was like Scottsdale or something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see it right here. They got video.
Two single-engine fixed-wing aircraft at the airport.
It's crazy that all these things, there's just video of everything now.
Yeah, I don't know if it was in the air, actually, now that they'd have, this is one of those where they have no details.
Yeah, I'm just seeing the video of the debris. No, it is. I've got the actual mid-air collision.
The vid
now. Yeah, because originally they were showing, this was from NBC News Channel 4, and they were showing the aftermath, but no, it's a mid-air collision. Tell you what, there is nothing left of those airplanes. I mean, that's just...
Well, I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, they're just disintegrated.
We have an avalanche up at Mount Bachelor. This is a very sad story.
We got someone clipped up there, too?
Yeah, two people died. They were a couple. Apparently, they're a very well-known couple in Bend. Yeah. Their names are Terrence and Susan Skursa?
Okay, let's go with that.
It's spelled S... K-J-E-R-S-A-A. Very odd name. At any rate, 57-year-old man, 52-year-old woman. They are well-known in Bend. I guess Terry was the principal broker at a real estate company there.
Yeah.
And his grandparents, Olaf and Grace, opened Bend's first ski shop way back in 1939.
Oh, gosh. So that is Bend legacy. I'm sure they are extremely well-known.
Yeah.
Were they skiing?
They were. So it sounds like this is... God, this is my worst nightmare. I like to ski, but I don't do a lot of, like, I'm not good enough, really, to do, like, the backcountry type of stuff. But that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
They were at about 6,700 feet on a south slope. They were running 320 vertical feet into a tight clump of trees. And apparently they triggered the avalanche.
Mm.
And it smooshed them.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I got my buddy that lives down in Bend. His family's really good, and they do backcountry skiing, and
I don't like that.
That terrifies me. Like, his kids are kind of, especially one's kind of a bit of a daredevil. And I'm not a skier, but that, some of those videos of watching, like, the real good bros outrun the avalanches, you want to talk about anxiety-inducing.
Right.
It's terrifying.
Here locally, McMenamins is closing its oldest one of its oldest locations.
Yeah, the old Ram's Head.
The old Ram's Head is closing. I got to tell you, I didn't know it was still open.
It is,
but I don't get down to 23rd much.
No, dude, it has been so long since I've been to the old Ram's Head.
35 years, corner of Northwest 23rd and Hoyt.
Yep.
It will close in June.
So, I mean, how many different McMinimins are there? I mean, like, there's like a...
That's a good question.
I mean...
I don't know.
Like, I know that it sucks for people that love the Ram's Head, but there is lots and lots of McMinimins.
Over 50 locations.
Yeah.
Really? 50?
56 in Oregon and Washington.
They're all over the
place. 46 in Oregon, 10 in Washington.
I didn't know they had that much up in Washington.
There's one right by my house. And
including 12 historic hotels, 2 full-service spas, and...
Where are the spas? Oh, one of them's at Edgefield.
Yeah, Edgefield.
Where's the other one?
Hello? Let me find.
I don't know. They got a real nice one up in Kalama, up in Washington. There's one right there off of 164th in Vancouver, and I don't know, like...
I do like what they do. Like, the whole bit is a good bit. I think
you know what you're it's getting. Unique. It's not, you know.
I don't think. Well, what I'm saying is, I like the concept of it, but I don't want to be a jerk.
You're about to be a jerk.
Well, they're kind of underwhelming, like when you actually eat there. Well, but I just think the what they've done with some of the buildings and venues that they have is really cool.
The other spa is Forest Grove.
Yeah, they. Okay. Oh yeah,
it's cool.
And that's got
Grand Lodge.
There's a music venue out there too. That's awesome. Out that one in Forest Grove. I saw a Blues Traveler there last year. That place is awesome. They do a if you're underwhelmed by the food, or I actually love their Ruby. I think that is one of my favorite drinkable beers. Big fan. I know some people are underwhelmed by the food, but like, you know what you're getting, and you're right, the atmosphere and what they've done and built that, it's an institution.
I gotta tell you, I think Edgefield is one of the coolest places out here.
Yes,
I really like it. It's just really cool.
You've never been out to the Grand Lodge? The one in Forest Grove?
No, I've been out there.
I was going to say, go, if you haven't been, and you're like, well, that other one's, you know, if you live on the other side of town, go check out the Grand Lodge. I was there for the first time last year and was really, I was blown away. I was like, God, this has been out here this whole time.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it had been out there. And we saw, what, Gary Clark Jr. was out there too. They got good acts that come out there.
I like that little dead bar in the at the Edgefield.
Yeah.
They have a little Grateful Dead bar out there. Little hole in the wall.
I used to kill a lot of time when we were over on McAdam. Thurston's Pub is right there on McAdam, and it is a great little neighborhood bar, and that's the McMinimins.
Yeah, we spent some time in there.
Yep.
I signed a contract in there once.
Did you really?
Yeah, with Tim, our old boss.
Yeah.
We had having beers.
There's something great to me about the all the bars, the copper top bars, and they're just...
they got a good vibe.
It's a good vibe.
Rest in peace, Ram's Head.
Well, you got time.
We hardly knew ye.
We hardly knew ye, yeah. But I mean, right there on 23rd, there's still like 2 other McMinimins.
Yeah, I don't know.
The bottle shop's right there.
I don't feel terrible for McMinimins. I feel terrible for the one-off that has to close.
Yeah, but there's...
McMinimins?
Yeah, they're doing fine.
Yeah. Would you vote for cannabis cafes in Oregon? That is next on The Fan. Yeah, P1 Scott is in, and he sums it up nicely. He says, I'll give McMinimins one thing. They poorly serve up mediocre food and beers in really cool buildings. And that's right! And that's the thing about McMinimins is like, aw.
That's it.
What? That's the thing about McMinimins is you don't really ever seek, I mean, I don't know, we don't really ever seek out a McMinimins, but every once in a while you find yourself at one.
Yeah.
And it's fine, but the buildings,
it
you're like,
great.
Oh, wow. Like Edgefield, I think, is awesome, but mainly for shows. Like we'll go out there for concerts.
Yes.
And so then you bounce around to the different little...
Yeah.
It's just kind of cool. Yeah. But I don't know. It's not really a destination outside of a concert.
I will contend there's a lot worse ways to spend your evening than a pile of spicy tots and like 6 rubies. I can sit there and kill an hour or two doing that. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
I like the ruby when I play the little par 3 out there.
Yeah.
Barefoot.
The Ruby is a phenomenal...
It's a good beer.
It's just it's a great summertime dad beer.
It's an easy drink.
It is an easy drinking beer.
All right.
Well, yeah, you can go out there and play it barefoot. And,
glad we covered all that, guys. We don't have time for my cannabis cafe story. We're going to have to do that tomorrow.
Okay. Because
it appears we have to leave.
We're going to be the new Amsterdam. Is that what we're doing?
We are out of here because Oregon Ducks basketball is coming up next. $2 beer night at Iowa. They're running into a buzzsaw.
It's Oregon Duck pregame.
Yeah, that's right.
Get ready for it.
Catch the Feeve. We are back tomorrow, 3 to 7 of the Fan. Good night.
Red Chips of Spain.